This episode is brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768.
This episode is also brought to you by Oddmo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade, awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Governor Kate Brown still plans to allow teachers and other school staff to be immunized against COVID-19 beginning this month. But she will delay eligibility for seniors because the feds won't be ramping up the vaccine shipments to Oregon as they previously promised. Brown's new plan calls for school employees to be eligible for vaccines starting January 25th. This is 2 days later than she had announced earlier this week. Oregon's age 80 and older will have to wait until February 8th, with eligibility for those 75, 70, and 65 and older to follow in phases. Those in older demographics with underlying conditions have been shown to be the most vulnerable to death and other serious complications from the coronavirus. The vaccine was supposed to be made available to all Oregonians 65 and older starting January 23rd, but state officials said this was dependent on the release of Federal Reserves that they had learned late Thursday that would not be coming after all. As Brown said Friday, yesterday we received the disturbing news that this Federal Reserve of vaccines does not actually exist. Brown placed the blame squarely at the feet of Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar and other Trump administration officials, calling their actions deception on a national scale, end quote. Let me assure you that Oregon's priorities and my priorities have not changed, Brown said. I remain committed to vaccinating our seniors quickly, but this latest news will unfortunately cause a 2-week delay in beginning vaccinations for seniors. Though she acknowledged Oregon's seniors have experienced the highest mortality rates related to COVID-19, she justified placing teachers ahead of them as a way to help guarantee a quicker path to safely reopening schools. Because one of my main priorities is getting our kids back to in-person instruction and protecting our educational staff to help achieve this goal, starting the week of January 25th, we will begin vaccinations of our educators and school staff, she said. In some counties, this may start even sooner. Last month, Brown and the Oregon Department of Education announced plans to ease restrictions and offer additional resources to help districts resume in-person learning by February 15th. But in many districts, including Canby, some teachers have expressed reluctance to return to the classroom until the vaccine is available to them and their most vulnerable colleagues. Residents and staff at Canby's three long-term care facilities had the opportunity to receive the COVID-19 vaccine recently, bringing what health experts say is the best available protection against the coronavirus to those most vulnerable and the frontline healthcare workers who serve them. Countryside Living, which specializes in memory care and was the first nursing home in Canby to experience a COVID outbreak, offered the vaccine to residents and staff at a series of clinics that began Tuesday. Countryside spokeswoman Michelle Quinn told Now Hear This Canby that their staff received the first dose of the Pfizer BioNTech in clinics that were administered by Bristol Hospice. Staff members did not report any side effects other than a sore arm, Quinn added. The second dose, which is needed for full efficacy of the vaccine, will be administered in 3 weeks, she said, along with an opportunity to receive a first dose for those who miss this clinic. A final clinic will be held in late February to wrap up Countryside's vaccinations. Ratcliffe Place Assisted Living also held a clinic this week, reporting on their Facebook page that it went great. We at Ratcliffe hope that this means we are one step closer to normalcy, the nursing home on Southwest 13th Avenue said. Our staff and residents were all champs about it. No tears or whiners here. Finally, Marquee Companies, which manages an assisted living, rehab, and memory care facility on the campus of the Hope Village Senior Living Community, announced this week that it was ahead of the game, offering the second round of vaccinations to residents and staff in Canby. Consonis Pharmacy, which is also owned by Marquee and specializes in service to long-term care facilities, has been markedly more successful in administering the vaccine than other providers. Consonis began administering the vaccine on December 21st, 1 week before retail pharmacies, and has remained ahead of schedule. More than 40% of Oregonians over 60 who have been vaccinated received their shots from Consonis. Consonis, which is the pharmacy provider for Countryside and Ratcliffe, expects to administer both rounds of vaccinations to nearly 20,000 residents and staff members of long-term care facilities by February 21st. This encompasses more than 200 facilities in Oregon, Washington, and Nevada. Marquee spokeswoman Jenna Cooper told Now Hear This Canby that the first doses of the vaccine were offered in Canby December 26th and the second round on January 14th. Cooper said 85% of Marquee Hope Village residents and 65% of staff opted to be immunized. For photos, find this story on our website, canbyfirst.com. Though the branches are unlikely to appeal to many birds, Canby's newest, quote, tree is really a 130-foot AT&T 4G wireless communications tower expertly disguised as an unassuming fir tree. The Canby City Council approved the project in October 2019 by a 4-2 vote, with a dissent from Council President Tim Dale and Council Trig Berg, neither of whom sought re-election in November. The move overturned a previous decision by the Canby Planning Commission, the majority of which had been skeptical about the project's design and proposed location in a densely packed commercial area where the tower might cause disastrous damage if it collapsed and its breakpoint design failed to work as intended. The majority of councilors ultimately sided with AT&T and the project moved forward, though more slowly than initially anticipated. Reduced cell phone usage along 99E in downtown Canby, and especially at nearby Canby High School, for much of 2020 may have made the project somewhat less urgent for AT&T than it had seemed in the previous year. The company said the new structure was needed because portions of Highway 99E continue to have minimal to no 4G service, and AT&T's existing coverage is at or near capacity in this area. Engineers identified this need through analysis of market demands, customer complaints, service requests, and other data. AT&T representatives told city officials during the 2019 process that the tower needed to be located approximately in the center of the targeted zone in which the company would like to improve the 4G LTE coverage and capacity. This was an area from South Ivy Street to Barlow Road, including Canby High School and businesses along 99E. It also had to be taller than everything else around it, in the company's words, to clear the clutter. Buildings, hills, bridges, and other structures, along with, you know, real trees, can weaken or even block wireless signals, so this tower needed to be taller than all of that stuff. the monofur is not part of the coming 5G wave, which the city of Canby has been prepping for, and it will not provide 5G service. Unlike 4G, 5G cells are much smaller and can be placed virtually anywhere without the need to construct larger towers. Governor Brown is dispatching Oregon National Guard troops to the state capitol in the coming days as the officials brace for the possibility of armed protests in the run-up to the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden on January 20th. The Oregon State Police asked for additional support after federal authorities warned that armed demonstrations and even attempted assaults on government buildings are possible in the weeks to come. For the past 7 months, your troopers have responded throughout Oregon to various protests, unlawful assemblies, and riots, said OSP Superintendent Terry Davey. Our goals have always been to protect people, protect people's rights, and to protect property. The recent event at our nation's Capitol building and at our own state house illustrate the need for law enforcement to be prepared and appropriately staffed for any large gatherings. The Oregon Army National Guard will be deployed as necessary, officials said, and their deployment locations will not be made public. State troopers and Guard members routinely work and train together in response to Oregon's challenges, including during times of civil unrest and the recent wildfire response. State police will take a neutral role in assuring the safety of Oregonians as well as protection of First Amendment rights, Davey said. The Oregon State Capitol has been the site of at least two large demonstrations in the past month by groups protesting President Donald Trump's loss in the November election and statewide coronavirus restrictions impacting businesses and schools. On December 21st, demonstrators swapped pepper spray with state and city police officers, with a handful managing to force their way into the building, where they continued to clash with law enforcement. And on January 6th, men claiming affiliation with the right-wing Proud Boys brawled with counter-protesters in the streets, while a smaller group again attempted to break into the Capitol. This included Cody Melby of Beaver Creek, who is alleged to have fired shots at a federal courthouse 2 days later. OSP said troopers will work alongside with other local state, federal, and local partners in providing safety for lawmakers and staff at the Oregon State Capitol or any other jurisdiction. State police did not discuss the specifics of the potential threats or response plans, citing public safety. The search continues for a woman who went missing in a Columbia River Gorge landslide earlier this week, though officials acknowledged that the rescue had shifted to a recovery effort Thursday after crews identified the area where her vehicle is likely buried under 15 feet of mud and debris. Rescue crews, along with Multnomah County and Clackamas County Sheriff's Offices, along with numerous other agencies, have scoured the rural areas in the vicinity of where Jennifer Moore's SUV was carried off in a mudslide late last Tuesday. Moore, an oncology nurse at Legacy Good Samaritan Medical Center, was reportedly driving home after a date with her husband in Warrendale. During her drive, her SUV was pushed off Interstate 89 by landslide debris. Crews specifically trained in marine and mud rescue used safety lines and rafts to expand their search Thursday. Deputies say the mud posed a tremendous safety risk and challenge with hidden holes, unstable footing, and a lack of visibility. They say the vehicle is likely upside down and under 15 feet of mud, rocks, and debris. All ground search efforts have been suspended. The sheriff's office said that there is no estimate on when they can get to the vehicle, as more rain in the forecast will lengthen the time it takes to dig through the debris. Oregon Department of Transportation crews will lead the debris removal efforts, while resources deputies continue to assist Moore's family during this difficult time. Stephanie Larson, a Canby resident as well as friend and co-worker of Moore's at Good Sam, started a GoFundMe campaign for the family that has already raised more than $10,000. Thank you for the abundance of support you've all given to Jenny and her family from near and afar, Lawson said on the page. The circle of love that people have for her is never ending. Let's keep up the good work and continue to help this beautiful woman and her sweet family. For a link to that GoFundMe page, visit canbefirst.com.
Stay connected to what matters most this winter with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While things may look a little different this year, as we all work together to keep everyone as safe and healthy as possible, you can be confident that DirectLink's reliable network will keep your video calls, Snapchats, stories, and photos crystal clear and at your fingertips whenever you need them. In 2021, DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. Joining us on the Canby Conversation today, again, it's been a little while, but is Gally Murray. She's the Suicide Prevention Coordinator for Clackamas County. Hi, Gally.
Hey, good to see you. Great to be back.
Welcome back onto the show. How have you been doing? We haven't really talked to you since before the pandemic. Obviously, a lot of things have changed for county employees. You said you're in the office today.
I'm in the office today. And I'm not in the office very often, but I am in office today, and it's a pretty different world, mm-hmm. as you know. And
you've got the mask on. I see.
I got the mask on. So yeah. Trying to be as clear and articulate as I possibly can through the mask and the microphone.
You sound great.
Okay, you know, things are it's just a different. It feels like a different world. Mm-hmm. You know, also being in the county building today after all of the things that are happening locally and the things that are happening in DC, increased concerns about security here in the building. And so it's just a very different world.
And obviously, you know, germane to the work you do, very, very heavy. I imagine a lot of people are dealing with stuff today. In this time. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of folks who are really struggling. And we don't oftentimes hear about those folks. There are a lot of folks that just like me and you who, they may have employment, they may have good health, they may have natural supports in place, but you know, none of us are immune from the struggles that have occurred over the last 10 months. So it's been pretty significant.
Yeah. I mean, you hear about that kind of the second epidemic of mental health crises and depression and suicide. Yeah, I mean, you're in that world in your experience here in Clackamas County in our communities. Would you say that that's real? Is that something that is overblown a little bit? I'm not asking necessarily say this is the percentage more that we're seeing in suicides or depression, but is it a lot worse since the pandemic with the isolation, with some of the job loss and stuff?
I appreciate you asking that question because actually what's happened over the past 10 months is that there has been a great deal of misinformation that's been spreading. And I think it comes from a place of people making some assumptions about what's happening with the suicide numbers and people making some assumptions about what's happening with human beings. And, you know, I do want to say that, you know, human beings are, you know, myself included, we are struggling. This is not an easy time. However, the rate of suicide has not gone up as a result of the pandemic. There are many people out there who have said, well, we've had, you know, as many suicides as we've had COVID deaths. You know, there's been lots of misinformation out there, but it's really important for people to know that the rate of suicide has not gone up as a result of pandemic. The rate of suicide has not gone up, period. It continues to have a trajectory nationally and locally of going up. That is not new to us as far as the data goes, but I think people are wanting to connect death from suicide and pandemic, and that's not accurate. I mean, you know, please know that people are dying. It's not that people are not dying, and one death, as you know, is one death is way too many. But there is not at this point, there's not a direct connection between suicide deaths and the pandemic.
Yeah, and let's be clear, because I do hear what you're saying. You're not saying the pandemic has helped. I mean,
no, right.
There is definitely issues that have come from all this isolations and the change to daily routines and everything that so many
absolutely.
Of us are dealing with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're right. You're saying there was already some sort of trajectory of suicides that were trending upward pre-pandemic, and you're saying that has continued, but we haven't seen a correlative spike that would suggest it's going up faster.
Correct. You know, and as far as depression and anxiety that you mentioned, you know, I don't have the data on that because that's not my area of expertise to be monitoring. However, anecdotally, being around people, you know, Clackamas County operates physical health clinics and behavioral health clinics. We operate an urgent mental health walk-in center, and you know, I can tell you that we are seeing people. We are open for business, you know, whether that's in person or telehealth, and people are coming in, and we're so thankful for that. And people are really struggling, and yeah. we're seeing depression, we're seeing anxiety, we're seeing thoughts of suicide. You know, and we're hearing stories of people losing their jobs, people becoming unwell, people getting COVID, people dying from COVID. All of those stories are definitely things that we are hearing about regularly and trying to support people around.
Yeah. One group that I know is really heavy on my heart, and I believe a lot of people's, a lot of our listeners as well, is our teens, our young people. I think that's a group that you work with a lot. Obviously, you know, things have changed for all of us, but with the loss of high school, the loss in many ways, the ability to see friends and see their support network in normal ways, loss of sports and extracurriculars, school being weird and really different, during a time when things can be really tough anyway, outside of all of that.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of people are worried about that group. Have you had a lot of experience with how, you know, some of them are handling it, obviously, without saying, oh, you know, John Smith right. and Canby. Right. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I can say that, you know, on a kind of a generalized level, you know, we're seeing our young people. And when I talk about young people, I'm talking about our K-12 population and even our, you know, our college aged, our young adults, our youth. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of young people really feel disconnected from their community. And, you know, school is a protective factor for so many reasons. You know, school is, you know, not only is a place that people get educated, but it's, you know, it's also a place where, like you mentioned, you get to see your friends, you get to see supportive adults, you know, you get to engage in activities like, you know, PE and other things that might give you some joy for some students and maybe not for others. But we have lost a huge protective factor in our community, and schools are doing an amazing job of trying to provide that for our students through distance learning. But it, you know, as you and I know, you know, we're talking over Zoom. It's not the same. It's not the same when you have a virtual world compared to a regular physical life world. And it's just hard to replace those things. And I, you know, we're seeing a lot of young people say that they, you know, they're missing out on the every day, like, you know, walking down the halls and hanging out with friends, saying hello to people in the hallway, gathering in the lunchroom, or going off campus if they have an open campus. It's the small things like that people are really longing for right now, because those were the things that really help promote connection. And when we look at suicide prevention, we're looking at how do we promote connection. People always say to me, Gally, you know, and I may have said this to you before, but like, you know, they say to me, Gally, how do I get involved in suicide prevention? How can I be more intentional? And I always say, just, you know, start acknowledging the other human beings that are around you.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking you to
do go get your degree or get licensed. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just asking you to say good morning, look at people in the eye and say good morning.
How are you doing? Hello. How are you really doing?
How are you really doing? If you have time to ask that question and time to stick around for the answer, then how are you doing? I'm curious to know how you're doing. This has been a really rough, you know, almost year. And for people who say to me they're doing great, I want to say, really? Are you really doing? I want to kind of poke the bear a little bit. It's like, are you really doing?
You
great?
Liar! Because no, you're not.
What's your magic? Because I'm not doing great.
Yeah. Oh man, that's funny. Yeah.
So, I think you know it's really what we can be promoting right now during this time is the same thing that we can be that many of us have talked about 10 months ago. It's connection. And it sounds really cheesy and cliche, but you know, the importance of reaching out to people, not assuming that people have the supports that they need or want. Like, you know, oftentimes we make an assumption like, oh, you know, so-and-so has a lot of friends, so I'm not going to call them. They've got it dialed in. And it's like, well, don't make an assumption that people have the support that they need or want. Reach out to people, and it doesn't have to be a long conversation. It could just be a text message saying, hey, I'm thinking about you. Just a reminder that I'm here if you ever need anything. I've got your back. Those are the things that really are going to carry us through this pandemic and the potential pandemic, on top of a pandemic, which is, you know, mental health related, suicide related.
Yeah. Yeah. Ellie, just coming back to what you were more talking about at the beginning of this conversation, but can you speak at all to the impact that the political unrest and uncertainty that we're seeing, the impact that that has on mental health? Does it have an impact on thoughts of suicide or ideation? Just that uncertainty, that difficulty, that strife, that anger that some people may be feeling, that maybe they feel that their side was not treated fairly in the election. Maybe they're in that camp.
Mm-hmm. That's an awesome question and so multi-layered, right? So I think about, you know, the impact of what's happening around us, and you know, I'm just going to call it what it is. You know, racial injustice. Protests on either side. Again, you said, you know, there's different sides of the camp. People have different opinions, and that absolutely, no matter what side you're on, that has an impact on people, particularly people of BIPOC folks. People of color. When we think about systemic oppression and racial injustice and suicide, there is a direct link between those two things. That, you know, when you are treated differently or hurt or targeted, or even people around you that look like you are killed because of how you look, the color of your skin, that leads to lots of things, and that has a direct connection on people's mental health, and that has a direct connection to thoughts of suicide. When people consider taking their lives, what the research says very clearly is that people do not want to die necessarily. People want the suffering and the pain to stop, and that they have no other way in the moment. They have no other way of thinking about options to make that pain and that suffering stop. And the only option in that moment is to end their life. And so does the unrest that we're having locally and nationally contribute to mental health and suicide? Absolutely. You know, it does on a 50,000, you know, global level, that as human beings, we can only tolerate so much stimulus, so much unrest, so much conflict, so much just turmoil that it impacts us. And you know, oftentimes with mental health, it doesn't just show up one day as like, oh, I'm waking up and I'm feeling depressed, or I'm waking up and I'm feeling anxious. It shows up sometimes in really subtle ways for folks. You know, maybe they're not wanting to, you know, get out of bed. Maybe they're not wanting to shower. Maybe they're not wanting to connect with friends like they were before. Maybe, you know, as a parent, you know, I'm seeing your kids in the background. It's like, I'm a parent too. It's like, maybe as a parent, we, you know, we're not as active with our children. We're not as engaged. You know, so there are very like subtle ways that it shows up. And then there are obviously the more acute ways where it shows up, you know, people having panic attacks, people not being able to get out of bed at all. You know, people, you know, really feeling so upset that they just can't function. But, you know, I think that this has affected people's mental health. And as you know, mental health is such an invisible thing. We talk about our physical health all the time, right? And it's easy to see when someone is struggling with physical health conditions. You have a cough, you have a leg where you're limping, you know, you have a cast on. So there's very clear indicators typically when we are physically struggling, and people can say, oh, I hope you feel better. It's more kind of accepted in our society. But when people have mental health conditions and they're struggling and they're very subtle, those are oftentimes very invisible. And that's where, when I mentioned earlier, when I said it's just really important for us to be connecting with the people in our lives, is that, you know, if I'm having subtle symptoms associated with depression and anxiety, and no one's connecting with me because they think I have all the support that I need because I have, you know, blank amount of friends or what have you, or people think I'm well-liked, and so, you know, whatever, they're not going to reach out to me. And if I'm experiencing these subtle symptoms, I'm doing it all by myself. And that's where people start to feel really alone and really isolated. And it's really hard to reach out for help. It's really hard to reach out for help, especially when something that you're experiencing is invisible and no one else is seeing it and no one else is feeling it. And so we have to create opportunities for people to say, hey, I'm not doing so well. I'd love to just spend 20 minutes today, if you can, just chatting. I'd love to tell you how I'm doing.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with 3 realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months. Sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
I really like that metaphor of comparing it to, yeah, a broken leg or a physical ailment that's so much more visible. Part of that kind of speaks to that stigma, I think, that I'm sure you guys on your team deal with a lot with mental health. But part of it also, I would guess, or at least what it made me think of when I heard you talking about that, is that physical health for the most part, has that much more understood and clear trajectory of getting better, right? That's why we say, yes. I hope you get better soon, because we expect that to happen. That's what the body does. It heals from a broken leg or a cold or whatnot. We don't expect that, you know, that without some type of outside help, maybe it would just never get better, you know?
Totally.
And mental health, we don't always understand that things to work that way. So, you know, let's start moving the conversation maybe in a little more helpful or hopeful manner. But what are some things that people can do as far as self-care resources for someone and a loved one that they think might be struggling with this kind of stuff?
Great question. Great question. So I, you know, my suggestion are a couple things. Again, reach out to people. So we all have a part in how to better support the people around us and our community.
Yeah.
So that could be friends, family, neighbors, people in our church community, people at work, you know, partners, spouses, children, you name it. So reach out, let people know that you see them, like, I see you're having a hard time and I'm here. The other, another option is there are resources in Clackamas County. There are resources for folks that are literally at people's fingertips. So the Clackamas County Crisis and Support Line, which is a 24/7 crisis and support line, is available to people. And people need to know that number is it used to be called a crisis line, but now it's called a crisis and support line, because people don't have to be in crisis to call that line. People can call just a chat. They can call to problem solve. They can call if they're concerned about someone else. They can call if they're concerned about themselves. And the person who answers the line, they will do all the asking of the questions. They will figure out how to be of support, how to make a plan. So people don't necessarily need to know exactly the answers as to why they're calling. They just need to know that they're concerned or that they need help. And the crisis and support line number, again, it's a 24/7 number, is 503-655-8585. Again, it's 503-655-8585. And that is a really great place to start to get connected to services if people are interested in that. You know, learn more about maybe some of the resources that are available in the community. So that's a great number to have in people's cell phones. I always encourage people to program it in their cell phone. We have 911 programmed in our cell phones automatically when we get a cell phone. And I always like to encourage people to add in the crisis and support line into their phone, so you always have it. So if you ever need it, it's, you know, it's just wherever your phone is, which is typically for us, you know, not too far away. It's always available. The other number that is always a good one to have is 211. So 211 is a information and referral line, and people can call 211 and get information about where they can get a food box or where they can find a temporary shelter when it gets cold and the warming centers are open. 211 knows about where those warming centers are and who has capacity. 211 is a great resource. They're not a crisis line, but they are a great resource for supports and, again, food boxes and healthcare, and they know a lot of things and they can direct you. So I would say three things are reaching out to people around you, remembering that the crisis and support line for Clackamas County is always available 24/7, and that number is 503-655-8585, and then 211, which is an information and referral service that has lots of information about lots of things depending on what you might need.
Yeah. That call line, let's just talk about that for a quick second. So people, if they you know, are maybe concerned, but who's on the other end of what, that this is confidential? These are trained people that are what they're doing, are there to listen.
Great question. So calling the crisis line is confidential. In fact, you don't even have to give your name if you don't want to. You can just call and say, I prefer not to give my name. And that is a possibility. No one's going to force that out of you. We'd rather have people call and not give their name if that's something that's important to people than not call at all. So the people who answer the crisis line are mental health professionals. So they're either qualified mental health professionals or they're qualified mental health associates, which basically means they either have a master's level education level, or they have a bachelor's level education level, but they are qualified as mental health professionals. And those are the folks who are answering the phone. And there are people call the crisis line crisis and support line for lots of different reasons. So again, there's this myth out there in our community that people think, well, I can't call because it's not a crisis, or I can't call because I'm tying up a line for someone else who might be really in crisis. And that's not true. We have lots of lines people can call. There's lots of reasons why people call. And please don't wait to be in crisis. Call that line. We'd love to be able to be of support to you prior to people being in crisis. And if you're in crisis, we want you to call too. But we're there as a prevention tool as well.
That's great. Well, Callie, thank you so much for your time. I know you've got some work to get back to. Thanks for taking time out to talk to us. Is there anything that you'd want to add before we wrap up here?
No, I just appreciate you spreading the information. I think the more that we can relate to our community that we need to continue to take care of each other. I know we're all tired, but we need to really continue to take care of each other, and that's how we're going to get through this.
I mean, just to anyone listening right now, like, it is okay to struggle. A lot of us are doing it, as Gally has said. And with all the anger, with all the division that's in our community right now, I just want people to hear that you do matter, that people do care, that none of this, whatever anger you see or even may feel, all of us are in this together, and we, no one needs to die over any of this stuff. No one should be thinking of that as an option. You know, like, I think that all of us making it through this is more important than anything.
And if you are thinking about wanting to end your life, please, please, please reach out. You're not alone in any of this. And we want you to stay here. We want you to stay here and live. And so we want to help you if you're struggling. So please reach out.
People do care.
Absolutely.
Gally,
right, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for all your work that you're doing to support people in our community, you and your team.
Yeah, you too. Thank you very much for doing this. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Cambie is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Cambie's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.